Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 14th of August, and I'm recording at 9:59 p.m., and that is British summertime here in rainy London today. Okay, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let's have just a very quick look at what's going on here this week, because it's been a pretty nervous time here, and that's not going to change anytime soon, I fear. Japan down a little bit, China mixed, not a disaster, in other words. India, good bounce on rate cut expectations, up 1.88% on the Sensex index. And looking at the European markets, mostly lower. Switzerland's an exception, up a quarter of a percentage point, but the other indices down a little bit, very small declines, a quarter to half a percent for the most part. Wall Street did a little better here, with modest gains, and that may help a wee bit next week. Well, I think again people be taking their cue from China. Okay, so let's work out from this week's activity and where we're actually going in here. First, as you know, we're in this period really from May through the end of October, which is on average more challenging for stock markets, and that's certainly been the case so far here. And we've got rotating worries. There was all the Grexit, and then Grexit lit writ large. I said in one of these audios that China was about 1,000 times more important than Greece, and that's probably an understatement. But everybody's nervous about China. Too much so? Well, everybody's got a different view on that. I'm a little bit concerned about it, because they've got to get the governance right. They've been trying to crack down on corruption. That's a very good thing, but that's also helped to slow the economy in some respects, although that's an acceptable trade-off, because they really do need to get the corruption under control. There was the buffoonery with their stock market interventions. Certainly they have a very accommodative monetary policy, and that I think will remain for a good many months longer. Needless to say, China casts a long shadow, as I've been saying in these audios. But if if they steady China, and it shows some signs of steadying, at least it's paused, if that can sort of sustain an orderly rally, and if they don't allow ridiculous overextended margin trading to take place, then it may well be okay. There's also the growth outlook to be somewhat concerned about. We could talk about this for hours, and I'm certainly not going to do that. But I'm a little nervous about it, to be candid. But I'm not apocalyptic about it, and but China is going to be a big influence, a big global player, for a very, very long time. And it's also command capitalism, command economy, and that's something that we're not all that used to, not at least with big economies. So it'll be interesting. What do I like the most? Well, China, if one can handle the volatility. But my top on my list, though, would be Japan and India. Japan's benefiting from the quantitative easing, and that's going to go on, I think, for quite some time. India, that's really because of the fact that we've now got some effective governance from Narendra Modi, and long may that last. We're in this lengthy medium-term consolidation for India. That's allowing valuations to come down or growth to catch up with valuations. And I would be hopeful about next year, and maybe we'll get a better better performance. We'll get move up to new highs in the fourth quarter of this year. That wouldn't surprise me overly. European stock markets, well, I'd love to see some more pro-growth policy, but in the meantime, we've got this big QE program that won't solve Europe's economic problems, but it'll help its stock markets, and that is favorable. And Wall Street, well, there's a high risk, as I've been saying, of that we see a bigger sort of cross the boards correction between now and the end of October. I don't think it's going to be a disaster by any means, and I but and also what we are seeing is a series of rotational corrections, and that would be the best outcome, I think, that we would see for Wall Street, is that we would continue to get those rotational corrections, but not enough to drag all of the indices lower. However, the point is that most of them have lost their uptrend consistency characteristics, and that has tipped the risk a bit further towards that 10% plus correction that has not occurred for a very long time, as you know. So we're going to have a choppy environment here between now and the end of October, at least. And I would feel that this is again far from a disaster. I think for all those markets that I've just mentioned, again, the best tactic if you're doing anything in terms of management is to, buy what you like on weakness, and take a few profits when you get overextended, when things race up and become overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. And I think that if we get through, once we get through October, I think then seasonal factors will improve considerably, helped by the advent of the next presidential election. So that campaign will be in full swing next year, and that's usually bullish for markets overall. Now, against the background of in terms of economic events, well, let's look at the trade-offs here. Very slow growth. That is still a concern. I think I'll be a little more concerned if we're still in the same sort of situation a year from now, because 6.5 years after the credit crisis recession and that huge peak in the price of oil that we saw in 2008, remember, $147? Well, those are two good reasons to have a very severe recession, and have had the worst sort of credit crisis recession really since the 30s. So it's hardly surprising that we're still struggling for a little bit of growth here, six and a half years later. Thank heavens we have had that quantitative easing. But so slow growth, that's obviously a concern. Deflationary pressures, well, certainly negative deflation in falling output sales and profits, That would not be good. We have to be careful about deflation, though, because we're also getting some positive deflation from technology, and that is much more benign. Now, other again, uncertainty over China. Well, there's always uncertainty somewhere in these markets. And so those are certainly some of the negatives. Will we see some currency wars? If people are worried about that. Probably not to any great extent. I feel. What's good? First, we have a low inflation. Also, we have low energy costs. Well, not for everybody, but in terms of the price of crude oil and also natural gas, those prices are right down there, and that is a hugely important factor overall. As a matter of fact, it is one of the key factors in my long-term scenario. I expect a few choppy years in here as we go towards normalization of interest rate policies. And the Fed, I think, will be starting that later this year. And the big theme that I've been advocating for quite some time is that following these very long, people sometimes call them secular bear markets. They're certainly secular valuation contraction phases. That's the way it started off. This long trading range that we saw, starting with that big bear market in 2000 as the tech bubble burst, and then of course got clobbered again in 2008. Well, that wasn't all that dissimilar to the big shakeouts that we saw when the earlier secular bull market had ended in the around the beginning of my financial career, and it had ended in the mid to latter 1960s, and then we had that long, choppy, rangy period, a couple of very sharp bear markets, that big one being in that was in help me out, listeners. What was it in 74, 73, 74? We had that very choppy environment, a ceiling on the Dow at about 1,050, and it wasn't until 1982 that we began another secular bull market. And then that ended in that 1999-2000 period. So this sequence, and if you go back further in time, and I won't bore you with all the details, but you'll see that happening more than just twice. And I have for a number of years been saying that before the end of this decade, we should see clear evidence of another secular bull market. Overall. So that would be very favorable for investors, obviously, if they perceive those opportunities, take advantage of them. And it needs drivers. The drivers do change from one cycle to another. But the drivers that I've talked about, accelerated rate of technological innovation, well, we certainly have that. And one of the huge benefits from that accelerated rate of technological innovation is the drop in oil prices. And I think that that's permanent. They won't always be at $40 or just above $40, but I think it will be hard to get crude much above 70 for very long. And that is a massive benefit for the global economy, because that's just all that's like, that high energy prices like a tax, and that was going to OPEC and other oil producers. Then, when some countries were moving away from that and they got involved in very expensive, not fully developed renewables, and so energy prices have been a big problem over the last 15 years, haven't they? Well, the next 15 years, I think we'll see those energy prices generally coming down throughout that time period as the technology on the renewables improves, and it will also help to keep oil and gas prices lower as well. Then you have the rising middle classes around the world. That's another a bullish theme here overall. Most economies are working with basically capitalistic models, whether it's command capitalism, as you see in China, or democratic capitalism, as we see in the West. And that's just this is this capitalistic system has opened up so many bigger markets and produced more growth and has enabled the more rapid development of these economies. And that's all very positive, and I think that will well, those are the conditions of the next secular bull market that I actually expect. So, I think 20 years down the road, I wouldn't be surprised if stock markets are much higher than what we see in here today. Okay, what else is going to go on? There are risks here, obviously, but I think they're mostly over the next few years. Some of these deflationary risks. We certainly don't want to see a collapse of the Chinese economy. I don't think we will. But it is going through a transition stage, and that inevitably causes some problems. The actual bubble that we have in markets, I believe, is the bubble in treasury bonds, because we've had this 35 years plus drop in yields. And I feel, and I've said this for a long time now, in terms of the last several years, I feel the yields are bottoming out. They're in base building phases. I feel that the lows for all of the long-dated government bond yields have actually been seen. Now, if that forecast were to prove wrong, I hope it doesn't, and I don't think it will, but if it does, then I'll have to recalculate here. But I'm expecting a gradual, choppy pickup in global GDP growth, helped by technology, helped by cheaper oil prices, helped by moving out of the very extensive deleveraging that period that we saw following the credit crisis recessions. But I think bond yields will be pushing up as the global economy does recover. That won't be a problem for stock market investors. It will be a problem for bond investors. And I would be very wary there, because people almost always overstay because they've had such a good run, and they hear people saying, well, it is ending, or it's going to end, will end, and those forecasts are usually early, and so people become complacent and stay with those positions. Keep an eye on the charts, that's all I'll say. You might well be right, but keep an eye on the charts. And if you start seeing uptrends established for those yields, downtrends, of course, for the bond prices, that those will be major danger signs overall. I don't think we'll have to worry about big spikes to the upside in the government bond markets, certainly not for developed economies, until we get a really strong synchronized global GDP growth. Well, we have nothing like that in here today, and nor have we seen anything like that for a very long time. But it will happen again, and it'll push those yields up higher, and then that will lead to some tightening of interest rates by central banks, and that will also produce some cyclical bear markets. But people continue to forecast some huge bear markets, and it's just not going to happen for these major developed economies, and I don't think it'll happen for very many of the emerging markets. But it depends on the sectors they're actually in. You know, if you're primarily a commodity producer, you're in trouble, as they're experiencing here right now. The rest of the world benefits from those lower commodity prices overall. So, looking at those commodities and the countries that are going to have the most trouble with this, primarily oil exporters. Their primary market has deteriorated significantly in prices, and that's a permanent change. So we're talking about the Middle East. We're talking about Russia, and a lot of economies are overly dependent on other industrial commodities, and they're going through a very tough time. A number of the South American economies are experiencing that as well. Among developed countries, Canada and Australia are experiencing some problems from this, and those problems are going to certainly persist for a while longer until global GDP growth is stronger. One of the trade-offs here, I mentioned that technology, very long-term bullish factor for corporations certainly, but technology is has a disinflationary effect on commodity prices. Technology enables the production of these commodities at much cheaper prices. The most efficient commodity producers will not mind that. They'll cope with that just fine, but the less efficient ones will be in trouble. So, with commodities, as you know, we have had I've been talking in the last couple of weeks about the oversold condition, because we had some climactic activity in commodity prices, and that has produced some technical rallies. I think that they're nothing more than technical rallies at this stage. I'm sort of back to the underside of declining 200-day moving averages overall. I think we could see commodities go somewhat lower. I don't become more bearish as the commodities go down. I don't become more bearish of the sector, but I think it's too soon to be a bull overall. And specifically regarding precious metals, I think that, well, we're obviously a lot closer to an eventual low, but I don't think we're quite there yet. So I think upside is limited to temporary technical rallies, but that we will see those prices move somewhat lower. I'm not a big bull of precious metals over the next several years either, because if my big call, the most important point that I've been making, if the call for a secular bull market is correct, people will be less interested in gold. It's as simple as that. Obviously, there'll still be the jewelry demand. These will still be monetary metals. They'll always be of some interest and have some value. But We think when did gold and silver and platinum plated, when did they really kick into action on the upside? And that was after the last secular bull market in equities ended. So it was in 2001, 2002, we were seeing those lows, and then they began those very, very powerful upward trends. But they didn't do very well during that last secular bull market from 1982 through 1999. Gold was certainly a serial underperformer during that period. On the other hand, and that was also the case when we had the secular bull market following World War II, picking up in the late 1940s, 1950s. But as that peaked in late and 60s, and we had a lot of inflation around at that time that kept precious metals going for a little while longer. And they were actually precious metals came on very strongly in that period, following the late 1960s through the 1970s. Until the next secular bull market started in 1982. So if we are heading towards a secular bull market in the next few years, I would say that's an environment in which precious metals are more likely than not to underperform somewhat. So I would not want to have any, or I'd want to have very small positions if I had any positions in those sectors. And in terms of energy prices, well, I think I've covered that. I haven't really covered those industrial metals, but I don't think we're going to see a really strong market until people are convinced that global GDP growth is picking up quite strongly. And if that occurs against a time of decreasing production due to low prices, which will probably be the case, then we'll see another bull market. But we're not ready to see another bull market, I feel, not starting this year in these industrial metals or precious metals. Agricultural commodities depends largely on the weather conditions that we actually see. And again, technology though does help to keep lowering agricultural commodity prices as their cycles develop. In other words, if you go back 200 years, commodity prices were much, much higher in real terms. But technology breeding stronger, more resistant crops. You look at yields, the improvements in yields that we see with crops. This is all due to the achievements of technology and of course improving farming techniques overall. So we really are in an environment here where commodities will, I think, stay low enough for a good many more years that they will not be causing inflation problems here overall. But as production gradually decreases on the industrial side, and as GDP growth does pick up in the global economy, then we will see the next upswing in commodity prices. But that's not a near-term factor by any means. Okay, so wrap it all up here. I think it's a choppy environment. It's a little bit stressful, a little bit difficult to make money here in the short term. The best strategy overall is buy low, sell high. in this environment. And but I think the risk of any kind of major collapse on Wall Street or any other developed markets is really quite low. And on that note, all the very best to all of you. I'll be back on Monday.